Welcome to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 268. This is Jeff Phillips Weverson coming at you from Aotea, Great Barrier Island, New Zealand. We're really lucky today to have an awesome musician named Peter Phippen from America. We've been trying to make this connection happen for several years. And Peter, I really want to thank you for your awesome music. Your, as I understand it, your primary instrument is electric bass, but you've taken up flutes in recent years. And I first heard of you, I think it was in 2012, because my former partner had acquired some of your music, I think from a friend of hers in Europe. And there was I can't remember the name of the CD that she had or the certain song, but I really liked it. It touched my heart. And I always thought, you know, I always was interested in what your more recent stuff might be like. And I think we connected on Facebook. But so thanks for joining us today. And tell us about yourself.
Thank you, Jeff. I started by accident playing the bamboo flute, transverse bamboo flute, in 1987, March of 1987. So that would be about 32 and a half years ago now. And I was a bassist before that. Played Fender bass for many, many years. I still do. But the flute really took hold of me. I was with a rock band, and we were touring all over the United States. And we were with Curb Records out of Los Angeles, California, for a short time. Like many rock bands, we had our moment in the sun and then fizzled. But in that short end of that the end of my stint with that group, I had discovered the bamboo flute. So I would play myself to sleep at night after shows, play as loud as you can for a few thousand people, then go back to the hotel, and I'd just play bamboo flute till I fell asleep. And I knew that was the pony I wanted to ride into the sunset on as I grew older. So I just spent all my time playing bamboo flute, and flutes start coming to me as gifts. People would see me play and they'd say, my grandfather brought something back from World War II, or somebody went on a vacation and they got these flutes. And some of them were tourist items, some of them were really great instruments. And now I have a room full of flutes from around the world, all time periods, and I have many modern instruments as well. I favor the ones that are antiques, and I've been very fortunate to have been recorded for several record labels. And if people want to know about me, they can check out my website, peterphippen.com.
That is so awesome. Behind you now, I can see a rack of flutes. Like if this was a redneck's house, it would be a rack of guns. But it's a musician's house, so it's a rack of flutes. But it is so cool. And I must lament the circumstance, because due to the fact that you're doing this late at night and your wife is asleep, you won't be able to play any flute for us in this session.
Yeah, I might be. I wouldn't want to do that anyway, because I'm just sitting here on my laptop, and who knows how good this microphone is.
You know, yes. You wouldn't,
it's probably like trying to play over a cell phone.
Yes.
You know, but if you like that wall, I can aim my computer at a different wall.
Oh, my God.
As you can see, there are racks of flutes.
Wow. How many flutes do you have? 100?
I had a room full.
Wow. You probably have some in keys that don't even exist.
Excuse me?
You probably have keys that don't exist except in your flute.
A lot of the antiques, we'll just call them haphazardly tuned, and that's my interest with those instruments. Is that because I was a bassist first, you know, you have to have. In my early stages of the flute, I thought it had to be in tune to a modern pitch. A luckily for me, in about 1999, I met the late Dr. Richard W. Payne, and I spent the last 4 years of his life with him in private study. He lived down in Oklahoma City, and it's about a 16-hour drive for me, but I would go down there and spend weeks at a time with him. He had over 2,000 flutes that were all antiques. It was like a hands-on museum, and they were from all over the world. And at that time, he was debatably the world's leading authority on Native American, Mesoamerican, and South American flutes, although he had a heck of a collection from India and Africa, China, and any country on the planet, and they would all be old. And after 4 years with him, I realized that there was something lacking in a perfectly modern tuned flute for me. And you gotta remember, I'm a bassist, so I had to turn off my musician mind and play what the flute would allow me to play, each individual instrument being its own thing. That's what interests me. Basically playing a stick with holes in it and using all different kind of embouchures, like not just flute à bec or whistle flutes, using transverse, oblique embouchure, interdental embouchure, like how they would play a flute in Iran, or how they would play a flute in Turkey or Egypt, or how they would play an Irish flute, or your conventional silver flute, which I don't play silver flute at all.
Did Richard Payne play all his flutes?
I have, yeah. My focus right now is replicas of the American Southwest, from like Anasazi flutes, Mojave flutes, Yuma flutes, Pomo, Grand Gulch flute replicas. I also, because you can't get the ones that are in the museums because they're too old. But then I have a bunch of, several really nice Edo period Japanese shakuhachi flutes, and antique bonseris, and antique flutes, antique boxwood flutes from New York City, antique flutes from South America, India, China, Africa, all cultures had flutes, except for the Australian Aborigines, and they had, of course, the didgeridoo, which is more or less a tribal trumpet.
Yes, I've heard it described as a sort of a bass flute.
You play it like a trumpet. It's not a flute instrument.
Yes.
A flute instrument is where you
blow,
using your face, your lips as embouchure, give the tone like that. Like a modern Native American flute is really a whistle. It's not a flute. It's more like an Irish whistle.
Yes.
Or a recorder. That's why I said flute à bec.
Yes.
French for beak flute.
Yes. Have you ever built any flutes?
Oh, early on. I've only kept one flute ever made. I'm more interested in playing the antiques or really, really high-end modern wood and bamboo flutes, or bamboo and wood flutes. I should categorize. I prefer bamboo.
Yes. Well, of all your flutes, are many of them pentatonic or other sort of tunings that that have less than the total chromatic number of notes?
Yeah, that's no matter to me. I mean, I have an African lamba flute, beautiful instrument, two tone holes, two finger holes, and it's a transverse flute. It's a natural note at both ends. Basically what it is, it's a harmonic overtone flute with two holes. So each tone hole is capable of several notes. And you can get a lot of interesting melodies on that. And the same as I have a Zulu flute from about late 1800s, early 1900s. And that's four tone holes. It's a little... It's not as there's less notes, but there's something special about it.
Yes.
So some of them have limited range, but that's no matter. I always say you play the hand you're dealt when you start playing these really old antiques. And some of them have extended range. Some of them have very few notes. Some of them play more songs than others. That's interesting, too. And, you know, the late Japanese flutist Watazumi Doso Roshi, he said, and I always believed this before I knew who he was, he said that music is all around you if you just take the time to listen. So I'm a firm believer that, you know, there are two ways of playing. The music is out there in the ethers. You know, it's just always floating around. And if you can tap into that, then you can play that. And then magic happens. If you're lucky, on a good day, I play the moment I'm allowed to play. And I don't have any preconceived assumptions about my playing. I try to never put my ego into my playing. I never want to show off with the flute. When I was a young bassist, you know, I showed off all the time. I was a little stage ham, running around playing as fast and as high and as many notes as I could. And there are two ways of playing, technical and spiritual. So when it came to the flute, you know, I never approached it from a musical and technical standpoint. I approached it from a spiritual standpoint. So my playing is actually pretty simple. There are a lot better technicians than I am. I just want to play the moment I'm allowed. And if some people like it, if people like it, good. And if people don't like it, good. You know, I've taken that approach and that's served me well. I've been very fortunate in the fact that a lot of people have wanted to record me and have me collaborate with them as a flutist. The fact that Canny Records picked me up in 1996 and released four albums with me up until 2006. I'm very fortunate for that, and I'm still on good terms with them. And I just was on Byron Metcalf's last two Inner Rhythm Meditations albums, Inner Rhythm Meditations and Inner Rhythm Meditation 2. I was just on Perihelion by Al Jewer and Andy Mitton playing Edo period Japanese shakuhachi flute, which happened to work very well with their two tracks that I'm featured on. I've had a good run with the flute. The flute's been good to me, but it's a double-edged sword. You can't say, I don't want to show off with the instrument, and I try to get out of the way of the music that's coming through because I'm basically channeling. And I'm not a new ager by any stretch, so when you hear me saying, like, I'm channeling the music, I'm an old rock and roller or jazz rock fusion bassist. And when I'm channeling, I'm just opening myself up to whatever is out in the universe, and I'm being an antenna, and I'm letting the flute play itself. That does not mean that I don't put a lot of time in with the individual instruments I'm playing, so they can play, you know, what's required of me. You have to have a certain amount of technique, because what if the music calls for a fast passage? Then you've got to be able to play it. Not because I want to play fast, because the music is calling for it, and you want to be able to do that. So I spend a lot of personal time with the instruments.
Well, may I ask you a very important and possibly difficult question? What is music?
Huh?
And does music have to be sound?
No. I mentioned Watazumi Doso Roshi before, and I'll mention him again. He said a scale of seven, you take a scale of seven notes, and you might think that's music, but it's not music. Music is all around you. So, you know, to me, if I walk outside and I hear the wind in the trees, that's music. The birds singing, that's music. If I'm walking in the woods and I come to, and you listen to the woods, that's music. Babbling brook, that's music.
Is a chainsaw? You know, is
it on a playground? That's music.
Is a chainsaw music?
Excuse me.
Is a chainsaw music, or a lawnmower,
yeah,
or a lawnmower?
If a chainsaw, or somebody's cutting up some firewood. Yeah, chainsaw. It's, must be. That's probably heavy metal music.
Yeah, literally. Yes. Well, it's interesting. The word music comes from the word muse, or the musai in Greek. They were the daughters of Zeus and Persephone or somebody. Anyway, there were these nine or several sisters. And so I always thought that was interesting, you know, that you have the Greek, like if you were a Greek poet and you wanted to be inspired, you would try to invoke the muse of poetry. Or if you were a flute player, you would invoke the muse of the flute to be with you and inspire you. But the muse, you know, the words themselves, it implies inspiration.
Yeah, well, and that's what I'm saying. If you can go outside and listen and hear what's happening, like I'm lucky that I live by a stand of large pine trees. So if I go out in my backyard and I walk into the pines and I sit there, I can be inspired by the sound of the wind blowing through the pines, and that inspires me to play. And since I try never to control my music, you know, I just let it happen by itself, then different things come out. It's what's interesting to me is that, you know, flutes from certain cultures, the way I play them non-traditionally, they do different things for me in different environments. To me, they sound different during the day than they do at night. My favorite time to record an album is at night, because I think it's just, it's a different vibe, different energy than recording in the daytime. I've recorded albums in the daytime too. Not that I'm saying that stuff is any better or worse than my night music. It's just different energy.
Yes. Well, does this concern the fact whether it's day or night that you're recording, or are you talking about when you actually conceive of the music? You know, sort of like if you have anything worked out in your mind ahead of time, if you conceived it in the day and then recorded it at night, or, you know, see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I try never to practice, I only try to play. This is an interesting story. You know, I was with R. Carlos Nakai in the early 2000s, and we were at Kent State University. And I ended up on this panel, and I was with some pretty heavy hitters, and Mr. Nakai being one of them. And this kid came up and played, and he was amazing. And I said, "Do me a favor. Promise you'll never stop practicing." And Mr. Nakai interrupted me. He says, "No, don't practice. Play." Huh? And that was very illuminating for me. And I took that to heart, and I started doing that myself. I quit practicing. And so when you walk out and you go to play something, you're always on. You know, whether you're playing for nobody, one person, for 10,000 people, you play the same. You play. You don't practice. Now, the musician in me, or the old bass player in me, tells me that, okay, you should run up and down the flute to see what it has when you first get one. And if you haven't touched one in a couple years that's been hanging on your wall and you're going to use it again, you might want to, quote, practice a little bit to find out all the little idiosyncrasies that are in the instrument, so you can know what to expect when you forget about them and venture off into the zone when you start to actually play.
Well,
I don't know how else to put it.
When you're going to record a CD, would you say that all of your tracks are pretty much improvisations made up on the spot in the studio?
Yes, with the exception of my Book of Dreams CD, that was all skeletal forms, kind of like a Chuck Van Jones CD. I had a head, and I had a melody, and then I had blowing changes, like a bluegrass band would have. And then there'd be a signal between me and the guitarist, and we'd come back to the song. And that got very boring after the first album with Canyon, because you ended up playing the same thing the same way every time. That's boring. So my next album, I took a much more improvisational approach. Although there are two songs on that album that are not improvised. And you got to remember, back then I was still coming off being a bass player / songwriter. So, but by the third album, by Night Song on Canyon Records, I had given everything up, and the total I do what I do now. I worked on a few flutes, 5 or 6 flutes, and I would just play them endlessly for a month or two, and went down to Phoenix, walked into the studio, and just started blowing. And that's my most popular album to this day. But I still record like that now. When I record with Roddy Crawford, a crystal bowl player, we never rehearse. We just show up at the studio and play, and everything's a first take. And there are no punch-ins or cut and pasting. If there's a mistake, we turn it up, so you can hear the humanity of the project.
It's a live a live recording in the studio.
There's nothing to be ashamed of, you know. Don't turn it down. Don't try to hide it. I stick it right up there.
Yes. Do you ever?
And nobody's ever called me on these. Maybe because they don't hear them as mistakes. I think that's kind of funny, actually.
Well, yes, I can understand that. Do you ever work, say, like, for example, an experimental track where you might multi-track together on several flutes, several different flutes, but in the same key, or even with different keys of flute that work together, all together?
I've been doing that for years, yeah.
Could you name a track in a CD or something that I might be able to listen to? That, because see, I don't have heard much of your stuff, and certainly not any of the more experimental stuff.
Okay, let me think. I gotta remember the names of my tracks.
Yeah. How many CDs do you have? 30.
From Lavender Calm, with a Finnish cantele player, Arja Kastanen. That's 2. Anasazi flute replicas. They're funny because they sound very much like a bonsuri.
Yes.
Like 2 bonsuris, but it's actually 2 Anasazi flutes.
Yes. Are they both in the same key?
And they answer each other. Now, if you just with plain flute, if you go to my Night Song CD and you listen to the title cut, Night Song, that's a Native American, contemporary Native American flute, and a contemporary Japanese shakuhachi.
Very good.
I played the Native American flute first, then I played the shakuhachi afterwards.
Yes.
Over top of it. I'm trying to think of one where I've used a silent space off my, what the heck is the name of that album? Shadows of Dawn. A silent place. Yeah, that's the name of the song. That's 1 Japanese shakuhachi, Edo period shakuhachi, but it also has some, there's some odd things going on with that one. Let me think of some others. A lot of my stuff has more than one flute on it. And if, Earth Essence, there you go. What album is that on? I don't even know. It's probably on Selected Works. I know it made that album. And it's also on Lavender Calm, Earth Essence. And that's 2 of the same flute. 2 Patrick Orwell bamboo flutes. I double and triple track flutes all the time.
Do you have any flutes that are, I forget what you call it, it's kind of like a, it's got two flutes in one, where one's kind of a drone and then you sort of play the fingering
something? No, I don't like those.
Well, I've never tried.
Don't. I have had some, and I've either given them away or sold them or traded them for other flutes.
I can understand that.
I'm more interested in really, really, really old bamboo flutes. There's something about a super old piece of bamboo with some holes in it. That really trips my trigger.
Now, is this archetypal and or acoustic?
Excuse me?
Like, is this an ancient sort of archetypal connection with a tradition or something that goes back in our sort of, you know, collective consciousness, the bamboo? Like, do you think, would that be the first substance that a flute was made from? Would the oldest flutes be bamboo?
Yeah, who knows, you know, probably. I mean, it's a simple, it's already hollow for one thing, and, you know, pretty easy to cut the notes out of it. Make a longer one.
Yes.
Just with a hot poker. You know, who should say? I know that in Wisconsin there's this thing called a bullweed, and it's very bamboo looking, but it's much thinner and much more fragile, and that's just a weed that grows here. And these same type of reeds grow over in the northern part of Russia. What's that? Mongolia, Siberia, something like that. I've seen guys playing these. They're made out of what looks like bullweed to me. It's called a shore. It's interesting.
What about flutes made of bone? Does that exist?
Bone? Oh, yeah. I have many bone flutes.
Really?
My sign says we have a poor network connection. But anyway, yeah, I have a lot of bone flutes. And bone, of course, the oldest flutes found are bone. The oldest one, I believe, is 45,000 years old, a Neolithic flute. Five tone holes. I believe it's a vulture bone. I have a wooden replica of that instrument, mathematically charted out, so I have those same notes. The interesting thing is, when you get people to make you replicas of these ancient instruments, you don't want them to bring them into modern pitch, because we know that modern pitch wasn't around back then. So it's very important that the guy who's making the replica doesn't have any romanticism connected to it. He's just a scientist mathematician, and he gets the exact measurements and makes the replica with the exact bore size, with the spacing of the tone holes exact, and the size of the tone holes exact, and only then can we know the sound of those ancient flutes.
Now,
that's what interests me.
Explain to us.
The flutes I can't get from the museums, because there's only one of them and they're so old. Then luckily, there's a guy who lives here about an hour and a half from me, who's his name is Rich Purdy, and he goes and he measures these things out, and he's an excellent mathematician. So when he makes a replica and he hands it to you, you know that this is exactly what it sounded like 1,000 years ago, or 45. He's the one that made my Neolithic replica. You know that that's what it sounded like 45,000 years ago.
Yes. Have you recorded with it on anything that we could hear?
No, not yet.
Ah.
This is something it's interesting. You know, you go into the studio And because of the music business, you know, quotations, music business, you have to have pleasing sounds. And some of these ancient instruments aren't as pleasing as others. Now, he just measured out some flutes that were found in a cave outside of Las Vegas, about 30 miles, 40 miles from Las Vegas. And he made a replica of it. He's making me one. And I tested the one that he made out, and that sounded beautiful. So, actually, with my old flute teacher's flutes, I recorded an album called, and it's already out of print. It's called Wood Notes Wild. Historic flute was Wood Notes Wild Historic Flute Sounds from the Dr. Richard W. Payne collection. And Dr. Richard Payne was my late teacher, and he's the one that had 2,000 antique flutes in his house. So with his instruments, I recorded an album of all antiques, and that was nominated for a Grammy back in 2010.
Yes. What happened to all his flutes since he's passed away?
When he passed away, his family sold them at auction.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I inherited, I won't say I inherited, I had to actually pay for it, but I only had to pay $125 for a Hopi flute that was the reason he took me as a student. He didn't take just anybody as a student. He gave me a pretty intensive quiz on flutes of the world. And then when I got home, there was a note from him. I'd like you to come spend some time with me. And I looked at my wife. I said, you know, I'm going to go spend time with this man. He was very old. I spent the last 4 years of his life with him.
That is such an honor. Well, look,
I would play and pay the bills, and then I'd pay up enough bills to go down here and stay with him for 3 weeks to a month at a time.
Yes.
Just move in with him and play flutes all the time.
That is so awesome. Do you have any recordings of him playing?
He had a couple CDs out. The Native American Plains Flute and the Native American Plains Flute Sings. Those are his two recordings.
Okay.
And they're hard to find, but you think you can find them.
Do you have them? Do you have them?
Of course I have his recordings, yes.
Yes. Now let me.
I have all his books, too.
Oh, my God. Well, look, now look, I'm trying not to dwell too much on any one certain topic, because hopefully this is only the first of more than one interview we'll do, but a couple of times you've mentioned the expression modern pitch. So tell us exactly what you mean by that, and then what might that be in contrast to?
Yeah. A440 is considered modern pitch. A equals A440, and that came about sometime in the 30s, I believe. Standardized pitch. Equal temperament. Now, in Europe right now, they're raising it. Because when I recorded with Adi Akastinen from Finland, I was noticing I had to lip up my flutes. And the recording engineer, Ivar Lundy, he's from Norway, and he said, ask her what temperament she's in. And sure enough, she was tuning a little higher than A440.
Is this supposed to be the 432 thing?
I don't believe that 432 thing.
No, you said it's new age crap.
I don't believe that at all. I've done my research on the history of pitch. Verdi did that 432 thing for his Requiem, and was to make life easier for the singers.
But what exactly does that? What did he do? Is it just like shifting the tone of everything by eight
down?
Eight?
Yeah, I see a lot of people say, "Oh, 432, that's the pitch of the earth." I think that's New Age BS. Ooh, did I say that on the radio? Oh, too bad.
You could say bullshit if you want.
See, I'm not a New Ager. But the thing is, I've researched pitch a lot because I'm interested in these ancient pitches. You know, we know the Germans they had a pitch of, you know, A405, A403, A402, you know, 430, you see, but you don't see 432 ever.
Well,
and that's interesting to me.
May I share something interesting with you? Have you heard of Paul Horn, the flute player?
Yeah. Paul. D flat or C sharp was the. Was it Paul Horn or Paul Winter? One of those guys said that D flat was what whales and wolves sang in.
Well,
I don't know if that's true or not.
I'm familiar with both of their music, but Paul Horn is the guy that, I mean, among other things, he's recorded inside structures like the Taj Mahal, the Great Pyramid, down in the Grand Canyon, various cathedrals and stuff. And he has stories of where he, like, you know, pays off all the guards in order to let him spend the night in there by himself and stuff. But what I found interesting in his CD of Inside the Great Pyramid is that before he even starts playing, he's sitting there in front of the king's coffer. And this is what he said. He strikes the king's coffer with his closed fist three times, and it makes a clearly defined kind of a low-pitched ringing tone. And guess what note it was? A440. That's what he said. And this is from the ancient Egyptians.
Well, I haven't seen that, but I'd sure like to see the...
Well, you can,
writing about that.
You can get that. Yeah. You can get that CD. It's called Inside the Great Pyramid.
Oh, I probably have it. Paul Horn is debatably the grandfather of New Age music, right?
Well, I wouldn't really call him New Age, because he was for real.
I mean, I believe you. I like Paul Horn. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, I think he's
Inside the Taj Mahal.
Yes, that's my very favorite. That's my favorite. Well, I think it has the nicest acoustics of any place I've heard.
You know, and a lot of people do call him the grandfather of New Age. Maybe because the flute had so much reverb on it from the Taj Mahal, who knows?
Well, to me, New Age is kind of a put down.
Yeah, New Age is a catch-all phrase for the marketing.
It's a marketing category.
What you're doing. If they hear something beautiful and they hear that it may have effects on it and it's sweet, so they don't know what to put it in, whether it be world music, ambient, you know, neoclassical, they don't know what to call it, so they just say, okay, New Age.
Yes.
Even Native American gets thrown into it.
Absolutely. Well, once I was hitchhiking, and this guy, we were talking about a lot of kind of quote-unquote New Age kind of stuff, and this guy asked me, I think he was a born-again Christian, and he goes like, Jeff, so where is the New Age headquarters located? He thought it was like a corporation that had a building called New Age Incorporated, you know, where it all came from. And I go like, well, you know, it's a bit more, you know, kind of distributed than that. But I can see why he would think that. But it's like all the New Age stuff. It's based on stuff that's for real, like the chakras and mandalas and yoga and blah, 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 and all meditation and all this stuff. It started from a lot of it from Eastern cultures and ancient indigenous people. But it's been kind of
very ancient stuff.
It's been bastardized in a way.
Yeah, you said it. I didn't, but I agree.
But yes.
And to a point, I agree to a point. You know, it's like I read the Tao Te Ching a lot.
Yes.
And I apply it to my music.
Yes. The note that can be played is not a note.
Yeah. I apply the Tao Te Ching to my music, and that I take away rather than add. You know, if I can say something with three notes, why would I use 12?
It's more notes to market.
No. You're saying the same thing. I can't believe I'm saying this, because when I was young, I never believed it, but now I do. Less is more. And to me, it's not about how fast your fingers are running up and down the pipe. It's about your tone. It's in the lips. It's not in the fingers. You know, it's about your embouchure. And I spend huge amounts of time on many different embouchures with the flutes. And that's my forte.
Well, that is very... That is a very advanced that's light years beyond me. And may I ask, could you play the same, could you use different embouchures on the same flute and get different sounds?
Yes.
See, now that's very interesting.
On a Sazi flute, you can play it. Most people play it straight on, like a shakuhachi or a South American kena or a Chinese shao. However, you can play it like a Turkish ney, oblique, or you can play it interdentally, like a Persian ney or Iranian ney. And I've seen some Egyptian guys do that too. Now, if you look at pictures of Hopi Indians from the late 19th century, you'll see that they're all playing with the flute between their teeth. You'll see the flutes between their teeth, and they're using the back of their tongue, and it makes a much harsher and louder tone.
That's interesting. How about playing one with your nose? A nose flute.
Yeah, I have nose flutes.
Do you? Is that
Philippine Islands and Hawaii? Yes.
Does it go in both nostrils?
No, you go in one nostril. Some of them, the shorter ones, you can close one nostril with your finger. I've read where you can put mud or something up a nostril. You want to have two free hands. I can play them with one open nostril and one closed. We see, I do a school program. The nose flute is the favorite of all the kids.
I'm sure. Well, check this out. I was in Berkeley, California once, and I saw a poster for a band, and it was called Butt Trumpet. And that created an interesting image in my mind. The kids would probably like that. The president might be good at that.
There are lots of interesting instruments in the world, that's for sure. And the nose flute is one of them. But, you know, it's a beautiful tone. It's very akin to the Papago flute from the Arizona-New Mexico Mexico border, which is an ancient form of Native American flute. It only has three tone holes, and it's made of a species of cane or bamboo called Phragmites communis. And there's a, on either side of one, they leave a node, and on either side of the node they put a hole, and then they route it out a little bit, and you put your finger over that, and that's where the tone is produced. Like with your finger and your other hand, you finger the three tone holes.
Yes.
And you can get sometimes 2.5 octaves with it, depending on the instrument.
Well, let me ask you this. Why did or do indigenous people play their flute if they don't have anything to market?
Well, there's all kinds of indigenous people around the whole planet. I mean,
exactly.
The flute's just an ancient instrument. I mean, if you want to, I like to believe that Neanderthal flute that they found is a flute, the bare bone flute. There's debate whether it's a flute or not.
What else would it be?
Some people say that a carnivore just killed a baby bear, and that's his teeth marks.
Well, have you heard of Stephen?
Some people debate that it's a part of a flute.
Well,
I've heard melodies played on it by a guy from Slovenia. He passed away. But I've seen it on the internet, and you know, I wish he wouldn't have played modern, like he was playing Ode to Joy and stuff like that.
Yes.
I wish he wouldn't have done that. I wish he just would have let the flute play itself. But still, he played it, and it was playable.
Well,
in the form it was found.
Have you heard of Stephen Mithen, Mithen? He's an Oxford University anthropologist who wrote a book called The Singing Neanderthals, and he reckons that the Neanderthals, far from being barbaric savages like we like to think of them, that they were actually a neo-shamanic culture that they communicated by singing, that they had musical instruments, that they made jewelry, and probably possibly agriculture and knowledge of astronomy and stuff like that. And I think...
Yeah, why not? I agree.
Exactly.
They probably did. A lot of people say they disappeared. I believe that they were were cohabitating with Homo sapiens at the same time, and probably the two merged. I mean, I've been playing in the bars since I was a little kid as a bass player, and every once in a while you'll see somebody who looks like a Neanderthal, and that's not being mean, that's just, you know, my God, there's why, you know, look around, look at humans, we're coming all shapes and sizes. As my father would say, it takes all kinds to make a world.
And Monsanto's helping us expand on that.
Yeah, and so that's what I believe anyway. I believe, you know, they probably interbred and what we have today.
Yes. Well, now let me ask you this. What kind of projects are you working on right now?
I'm recording some stuff. I've played on three records that are up for ZMR Music Award this year. Like I, as I told you, Byron Metcalf's Inner Rhythm Meditations, Volume 2. Al Jewer and Andy Mitten's Perihelion, which is up for ZMR Music Award. And Ann Cater's Flute Meditations for Mindfulness and Relaxation. I think that's the name of that album. And that's also up for a music award. I co-produced that, and I played bass, Fender bass, on that one.
Yes.
And Ann played bass.
Yes, I've heard some of her music.
It doesn't matter who plays what to me. If you get some like-minded musicians in the studio, and it really doesn't matter who plays what, as long as the end result is good.
Yes. Now, let me ask you a bizarre question, but physically not impossible. Is it possible to play any kind of flute by inhaling through it rather than exhaling into it?
That would be free reeds, like from Southeast Asia.
So that exists.
I don't know if you're aware of the Hmong culture.
No.
They have free reeds, but I don't know if the free reeds actually classify as the flute. Like harmonica, you breathe in, you breathe out.
Yes, yes.
Well, a very primal form of harmonica is like the gang. Gang. It's a Laotian instrument, but I've seen them in the Chinese version. And the shang from China, you can also breathe in, breathe out. I don't know if that classifies as a flute. I think it classifies as a free reed.
Yes. Well, you said before that you like to play along with whale songs.
Yeah, I like whale song. I like all natural sounds. You know, like I grew up in the foothills of the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York. So I would spend vast amounts of time just, you know, walking around in the woods and listening. When I was a little boy, my mother used to take me on picnics, and she'd make a tuna sandwich, maybe a bottle of Coca-Cola and an apple, and then we'd go up into the woods, and we'd eat our lunch, and then she'd ask me, "What do you hear?" And I must have been 4, 5 years old. And she wouldn't settle for the wind in the trees. That wasn't a good enough answer. She wanted me to really deep listen. And, so come back with, like, the wind blowing in the grass, you know, whatever you'd hear. If there was a brook maybe quarter mile or half mile away, if you could hear that, that was good, you know. She wouldn't let you settle for, like, oh, I hear the birds singing. I mean, if that's obvious. You know, she was always looking for the hard answer. What do you hear? Basically, she was making me listen to the universe or the earth itself. Because what part of the cosmos do we have access to but the earth, you know? So the earth is, earth music is really space music.
Yes, I always tell people where we don't need to go.
I like to call the music that I play living music, since it's all made up on the spot and improvised. I have no idea what I'm going to play. I know what flute I'm going to play. I know what flutes I'm warmed up on, and I just let them start playing themselves. So with the first note, it's the birth. And then the piece matures and blossoms, and then starts fade away. And with the last note, it's the death of the piece. And if you got the computer rolling and you've captured it, then you can release it. Because I can't play any of the pieces on my more recent albums ever again. I can play a facsimile, but it'll never be the same.
Very interesting.
So living music or earth music or space music, I don't know what to call it, what I do, ambient. You know, some people call it world. So I'm lumped into the term new age, for lack of a better thing.
Have you ever seen the Aurora Borealis?
The Aurora Borealis?
Yes.
You mean the Northern Lights?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
You've seen it
many times. Well, I live in the Northern Hemisphere.
Exactly. Well, look, I've heard more than one person say, and these tend to be Scandinavian people, that sometimes the auroras actually make a sound that you can hear.
I've heard that too.
Have you heard the sound?
I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear it.
Absolutely. Might it be a tinkling sound?
I have no idea. I'd love to hear it. I've never heard it.
What if it sounded like whales?
I'd have to hear it. I don't know what it would sound like, but it's intriguing to me, I'll tell you that.
Yes. Well, what are some of the freakiest sounds that you've ever heard that you were able to identify, that you know? What's the freakiest instrument?
A wounded rabbit makes a pretty freaky sound.
But
that.
Maybe ones, sounds that aren't expressing pain.
Yeah, I like the trees creaking. Old trees that creak. That's an interesting sound to me. I wouldn't call it freaky or creepy. It's just natural.
Yes, I know that sound.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, I recorded cicadas get really loud when it's hot, and I've been
cicadas.
Recording them.
I'm familiar with that sound. It's just a chorus. It's like listening to the frogs sing at night. You know, if you've ever been by a quiet swamp in the country, you know, the frogs sing. And I think I like the frogs better than I do the cicada sound.
Yes.
But, you know, to each his own. It's personal preference and taste.
Now, what about bird sounds? Do you have certain birds that you like?
Oh, yeah, I love bird song. I love mourning doves. I love that they're cool. It's a beautiful call. Very flute-like.
Yes. Down here, we have a little owl called a moorpark, and it goes...
Yeah, owls are... I love owls, too. All bird song is interesting to me. Actually, you know, I like how crows sound. And I have a crow call. And there seems to be a lot of crows around where I live. And if I'm out in the summertime, I'll have the crow call with me. And if I hear a crow start, you know,
caw, caw.
Yeah, yelling at me, I'll holler back with my crow call. And sometimes I can get, you know, 10, 15 of them all going nuts.
Really?
And my wife will actually come out and say, stop that. Drive our neighbors nuts.
That's funny. Well, check this out. In the
it's humorous.
In the Northern Hemisphere, the crows go, caw, caw. But the crows in Australia and New Zealand, they go, quack, 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 quack. It's a totally different...
It's interesting. See, so... Again, you can only... It's like they say, you only can write what you know. Well, you can only play what you feel or play what you know. And since I grew up in upstate New York, and now I live in... West Central Wisconsin, which is still the Northern Hemisphere. You know, I've been fortunate. I've been able to travel some I've been to Germany, and I've been to Slovenia and Norway and Austria. I've been all over the United States. So I know what it sounds like in Nebraska or South Dakota or Texas, Oklahoma, New York, of course, New Jersey, Florida, you know, wherever, you name a state, they all sound a little bit different. They sound the same, but different. It's interesting to me. And those are the things I listen for. And these are rather subtle differences, but they're still differences.
Yes. Well, do you think that a lot of people have don't have very acute hearing?
I don't know. I don't know about that one. I think maybe they're just not listening.
Yes, they're not. The sound is reaching their eardrum, but they're just not attending to it. So are they still hearing it?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It's like the tree falling in the forest. The vibration is still there.
Good question. I don't know. I don't know. You know, some people might hear the birds as just noise to them. They might not hear it as music at all.
It's like one man's meat is another man's...
The trees. They might find crows annoying. I find them kind of funny and fascinating.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I like to listen to raccoons. They purr just like cats.
Do they?
Powder. I don't know if you knew that.
No.
If they're happy, you know, they do that thing a cat does. They purr.
Yeah.
And it's much louder and a little more bassy. Interesting.
I heard that from a big black bear once. It was so deep it made my chest resonate. This was in Yosemite in the middle of the night.
Yeah. As much as I love animals, I wouldn't want to get that close to a bear.
Well, I didn't see it. It warned me.
In the wild.
It warned me, so I didn't walk into it in the pitch darkness. What is the sound of one hand clapping?
That's the one sound. That's a simple question. That's the one sound.
Ah.
That's it right there. The one sound.
Well, Peter, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do this. It's like several times we could have gone for an hour down the little route that we were talking about, but I've pulled back and to go down another path. And because you're a very interesting person, you've got a lot of, I'm only seeing the tip of the iceberg of what you're all about. You know, and then, you know, like Steve Martin said, he said, talking about music is like dancing about architecture.
Okay, yeah. The space between heaven and earth is like a flute. Empty, yet when moved, more and more emerges from it, and many words exhaust themselves on it. But let me get back to that hand clap thing for you. The one sound. That's just everything. You walk outside, clapping your hands is no different than walking outside. It's all part of the one sound. I gotta send you a video.
Is that the ohm?
So you can check that out. That's why that was a question. I was expecting something really hard. But yeah, you clap your hands and it's vibrations in the air. One sound. And everything is the same. Music is vibrations in the air.
Well, if there's no one to hear it, is it still music?
There's still vibrations in the air, so yes.
Very interesting. Well, look, can we do this again sometime?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, I could be wrong on that last answer, but if there's no one there to hear it and tree falls in the woods, then there's definitely vibrations.
Yes.
And the vibrations, something hears it. Maybe we will. Maybe we don't hear it, but maybe the animals do.
Yes.
Maybe the trees hear it, you know? Or, maybe trees have more intelligence than we think they do.
Absolutely. And I think that there's a fine line.
My name is S.M. Gibson, and I am the host of Anti-Media Radio on YTY.TV.